Nathan Hubbard. Spring has sprung, the birds are chirping, and the pop girls are pop girling.
Nora Princiati, the pop girls are girling. What does that even mean? You wrote this trailer. I do not talk like this, Nora.
But I try so hard to teach you.
Well, here's what I do know. This spring is packed with new releases from some of the biggest pop stars in the world, including our girl, Taylor Swift.
And every single album is back to cover it all.
We'll, of course, break down every angle on the Tortured Poets Department, out April 19th. But we'll also cover new music from Beyonce, Dua Lipa, Maggie Rogers, Kacey Musgraves, Ariana Grande, and whoever else just might surprise us this spring.
It's Pop Girl Spring on every single album.
New episodes starting March 28th, just in time for Cowboy Carter, up through Dua Lipa's Radical Optimism in May.
So subscribe to every single album on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Welcome to another episode of Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we got a friend of the show, none other than Kent Babb, one of the best writers I know. Last time he was on here, he was talking about a book he wrote. He's been back in the news a little bit lately, and I'm sure most reporters and authors and writers don't like to necessarily be the news, but you were the news for a little while. You wrote this now infamous, I guess, Washington Post piece that was very fair and balanced, entitled The Kim Mulkey Way. So first, I recommend everybody read it, but talk to me about this piece, how it came about, and why a piece on Kim Mulkey.
Yeah, I mean, for one, I just think she's super fascinating. And I indeed met her in December 2021 when I was in Baton Rouge for something else. And she and I got along great. We met for 45 minutes, hit it off, vibed a little bit. And, you know, she's very suspicious of the mainstream media and specifically the Washington Post. And when I told her where I'm from, I grew up in rural South Carolina. And if there are two Americas, I've lived in them both. She seemed a little more intrigued by me. So, you know, her saying that she shut it down and it was a hit piece on Brian Kelly, that's not true. LSU shut it down back then. And I just sort of kept being interested in her. Watched the Final Four last year. The game plan she had against Caitlin Clark was amazing. And to win a national title at LSU in year two is just incredible. So I just kind of kept my eye on it. And then it was probably mid-February that I kind of hit the gas on reporting this time.
Tell me about the Brian Kelly piece. What happened in that whole scenario with LSU? And how do you kind of go back to the well when they don't really want you there?
Well, if I only went to places where they wanted me there, I wouldn't really go anywhere. I don't know. I mean, like, that was when LSU got Kelly to leave Notre Dame to come there for like what could have been a nine-figure contract. And I had just written Across the River about New Orleans, and I was very familiar with the corruption and economics and the disparities in Louisiana. And I just told my editors, I was like, hey, look, like this is a nine-figure guy. I did the math. He's going to make more in a day than most Baton Rouge residents make in a year. And I just want to go down there and write about the economic disparity. And that's what that was. Like, that was not ever a Brian Kelly story. I told people then, I've told people now. He didn't do anything wrong. I mean, that's just the cost of doing business. Our guy Dabo Sweeney makes that much money, and Nick Saban made that much money.
that's fascinating. You mentioned something that I want to shout out, Across the River, a great book. It came out in August of 2021, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
August of 2021, which is a great book, which highlights, if you believe there are two Americas, it highlights two Americas, but it delves deep into the bayou, into Louisiana. By the way, how did the book go? How did your first kind of endeavor into that HarperCollins family writing this amazing book go?
Not really good. I mean, they had my back. They supported me. They pushed it as well as they could. And I'd love to work with them again. I hope it goes great. I'm looking forward to reading your book coming out here real soon.
April 23rd, baby. Go pre-order. Go pick it up. How difficult was this piece to do? And by that, I mean, how difficult was it to find people willing to talk on the record, given Mulkey's track record of kind of holding grudges or responding poorly to criticism?
Man, but Carr, you know what was hard? It was getting people to talk to me about the good stuff, why they love her. And I actually encountered some of this when I did the book on Allen Iverson in 2015. Like, that was, I guess I have like a little bit of a trend of writing about people who don't want to talk to me. And, you know, so in 2015, I did a whole book on Iverson. He didn't want to talk. And, you know, like the hard thing there. And I think it was similar because people will go to the wall for these people. I mean, yes, they are complicated, complex folks. And just like with Iverson, I think the people who love Kim Mulkey love Kim Mulkey. Like, they don't want some outsider from the Washington Post of all places to start like rattling skeletons. And so those people are the ones who I had a hard time getting to talk, because they thought by talking to me, they were betraying Kim. Like, just by the act of talking to me, they were going against her wishes. And so, like, I got to tell you, I mean, it was easy to get people to be critical of Kim. Like, I didn't have to make any promises of anonymity to get people to come out of the woodwork on that part. To get people to talk glowingly about why Kim is so good, just so damn good and serious and passionate, that was the part that I had a really hard time with. And I kind of had to just hustle and hustle and hustle.
Before we dive into the article itself, were you surprised at the press conference taking issue with the article before even reading it?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I knew that she wasn't going to go quietly. And, you know, it's always surprising when somebody devotes the opening minutes of a press conference to you. And, you know, I think we've seen some of this in your world, the political world. And, you know, like, the person tries to get ahead of this thing.
It was a page right out of Trump's playbook. And, you know, sometimes those things are successful.
Well, yeah. And sometimes they draw a ton of eyeballs to the work. And that's what happened here. So I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously biased. I always think it's easier just to have a conversation with the person writing about you. I just always do. Like, you can direct it then. You can call BS then. Like, you can, you know, shout at me then. Like, you can threaten me then. Like, you don't have to do that. And I mean, I'll leave it to other people to decide whether that was effective for her. Probably to the audience that appreciates that kind of thing, it was. But I mean, it also drew a ton of people to the story that I was going to write, and they assumed that it was going to be this thing that was going to take her down. We were in Iceland last week on my daughter's spring break. So this is all going down while I was in Iceland. So it was like the most intense work week of my life, plus glaciers. And I just like kept turning to my wife and being like, you know, I don't have anything like that bad. Like, there's nothing there that's like.
So let me ask you a question. I think I know the answer to this question, because I know you and I kind of know how this journalism thing works. But there are a lot of people who will make the argument that Mulkey's press conference threatening to sue you guys, hiring Clara Locke or whomever she hired as the best defamation lawyers in town, scared you and your editors into trimming down, taking off some of the fat, tightening up your article and eliminating some of the negative stuff about her. Can you please dispel that notion right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not true. And, you know, what we did is attribute literally everything. And, you know, our people are the best in the world at what they do, whether that's legally or editorially. And I'm lucky to be just part of the team. And, you know, if there was a word that we thought like could be interpreted one kind of way, we attributed it. And the first draft of this story is not remarkably different than like the ninth draft, which is what this wound up being. And I mean, even that, like my editor and I always work on multiple drafts of stories. It doesn't matter what the subject matter is. And it damn sure doesn't matter if somebody goes on a press conference rant about that story. Like we do 4, 5, 6 drafts sometimes each of kind of finer filtration. This was a little bit different because we had to be super careful. She was firing a shot across the bow, but we didn't take anything substantive out. Like there was no accusation or allegation or anything like that. They were like, oh no, we should probably not report that. What the story was is what the story is.
I've read it and I think it's relatively mild in terms of what was ultimately written compared to how we were hearing about it first, right? And then when you read it, you just think it's so balanced. I think it's pretty common for folks to hold grudges. I fall out with family members, et cetera. But what stood out about Mulkey's story made common human relationship dynamics noteworthy to you?
I think how extreme it is. And like, that's the thing with Kim and every part of her life is that it's just so black and white. It's so extreme. She's really good as a coach. And like, man, like the story started out, like the story I pitched her on in 2021 is how does this little 5'4" white lady from the country. And I grew up in Cowpen, South Carolina, and
I'm from Denmark, South Carolina. We know, but that she might be more country than both us.
Like I showed up there and I feel like I can go into anywhere. And I was afraid to go down that property line. But it started off as like, how does she connect with these people who aren't, they don't look like her. They don't think like her. They're not from where she's from. And yet she can draw the absolute best out of them. At one point in the process, I expected or hoped Kim or someone close to Kim would just do a cursory look of what kind of stories I do. Like I don't do hit pieces. I do nuanced, long, very deeply reported things that, you know, like it, you may not like it, but it was never going to be what she thought it was going to be. And I wish that somebody in her universe had been like, hey, look, like this is not that guy.
Yeah, you're not that guy. You are way more professional than that.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This is a run-on question. I feel like Chris Cuomo here, but you know, just answer it however you want to. But unpack the Brittany Griner angle for us here. What was the relationship with Mulkey at the time she was detained in Russia? And was Mulkey's behavior during Brittany's detainment on brand for what you've learned about her during your reporting? Or did you come across instances with former players where she'd stepped up and been vocal when issues with former players arose?
Ooh, yeah.
For the record, I'm very, very, very critical of the way she handled Brittany Griner. Brittany Griner is the best player she's ever had, period.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people are. I mean, Kim's peers in coaching, I feel like that to them is kind of where it crossed the Rubicon from going from, okay, like Kim is a little bit eccentric to, you know, hey, like Mickey DeMoss, kind of this legendary coach and assistant, Pat Summitt's assistant, was just like, you got to bury the hatchet for this. Like, this is real life. So I don't know what the root of their falling out was, but Brittany is this free spirit, big personality, you know, like doesn't really care about awards and plaudits and things like that. And Kim is like the super straight line conservative, do it this way, particularly when she was at Baylor. And Brittany just wouldn't do it in that kind of straight line way. And they butted heads. Kim didn't like Britney's tattoos, didn't like some of the stuff she was doing, and had a history. Kim had a history by then of, if not having a problem with players' sexuality, with gay players' sexuality, she did not seem to like displays of sexuality. And again, like, this is in Waco, Texas. This is at Baylor. This is right after the Dave Bliss scenario where one of the men's basketball players got killed. So, like, I can see doing it by the book a little bit, but Brittany and Kim just butted heads. And I believe it was 2013 or 2014. That's when Brittany went in the media and released her book that said that Kim tried to get gay players to hide their sexuality. And with Kim, there's just no coming back from that. And like, if you betray her, in her mind, like, she's so deeply loyal, anything that you go against her, she sees kind of as an act of betrayal. And you would think that there would be opportunity for forgiveness or discussion. And that's just not what happened with those two. And Brittany is very proud and sure of who she is. And Kim is very proud and sure of who she is. And it just never happened. Even when Brittany got detained for hashish oil and a little vape pen. And, you know, like, a lot of people in basketball were uncomfortable with the way Kim did not handle that by not speaking out in favor of Brittany, by not saying that Russia needs to send her home. I mean, other coaches, including your favorite coach in the world, was just like every day calling for Brittany's release and send her home. This is a wrongful detainment. And Brittany's own coach just wouldn't do it because they had whatever disagreement they had years and years earlier.
Did you come away with the impression that Mokey treated lesbian players differently?
Short answer, no. I mean, I came away with the opinion that she treats people who don't do it her way differently. And whether that's the way you've got your hair, or if you wear makeup, or if you are outspoken about certain things. And man, like, the thing that's weird about that is right now, and particularly with the last 2 years, LSU teams, these are like young women who are very sure of who they are. Players have more agency and power than they've ever had. You know, they can dress how they want to dress, look how they want to look. And by the way, look at how Kim Mulkey dresses and presents herself. So there's a little bit, it seems like there's a little bit of a double standard on some of that stuff. But I feel like Kim has always had this very black and white view of the right way and the wrong way. And it even pertains to appearances. And if you go crossways with that, then she's got a little bit of a problem with it.
So let me ask you this question, because you've examined her from her Louisiana Tech days. Have the LSU years softened Mokey a bit, or do you think this iteration of Kim Mokey is similar to what we've seen at Baylor and Louisiana Tech?
It's funny you say that, because Gary Blair, who's like the legendary coach at Texas A&M, who just retired a couple years ago, he was insisting to me that Kim is softer than she used to be. And I can't speak. Yeah. Like, I mean, I talked to a ton of people about this, and he was close with Kim, and, you know, they used to have a rivalry when Texas A&M was in the Big 12 playing against Baylor every year, twice a year. And, you know, they had a relationship, and I think he's watched the evolution of Kim, you know, go from this, like, I've got to be perfect. When she had got passed over at Louisiana Tech for the head coaching job, then goes to Baylor of all places, which was never good. Like, it had never been even remotely good. They never made the NCAA tournament, and suddenly she's rattling off national championships. And I think she became increasingly confident and increasingly stubborn, maybe, and this is the way it's got to be. But going to LSU, Baton Rouge is not Waco. LSU is for sure not Baylor. You know, they it's just a different, like, Louisiana is a different place. And like, she could never wear or do some of the things at Baylor that she's wearing and doing now. And, you know, Gary Blair was saying that that's evidence that she's softened. You know, it's still hellfire and brimstone, but it's not quite as hot as it used to be.
So that, speaking of Gary Blair and others, how is Kim viewed by her peers in the community of women's basketball coaches?
Kind of like everybody. I mean, respect, but, you know, there's just a little bit of, she's not social. like the Final Four every year, like what's getting ready to happen at the Final Four in Cleveland is like an annual coaches convention. Like this is a party. Yeah. And there's a big VIP room, you know, that's got every liquor imaginable and everybody comes. I mean, it's the party of the year where like enemies become friends and friends become like lifelong soulmates. I don't know. But like this is just where everybody kind of lets their hair down. And even Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma used to clink glasses and they were bitter rivals. And Kim just never went. Like she never went. She's like, she's very proud of never having had a drop of alcohol and she doesn't like putting herself in those situations. And the one time people told me that they saw her at the Final Four was like right after her divorce in 2005, 2006. And she was sitting off in a section of the arena all by herself, you know, just watching ball. And she's just not social. And I think that's confusing to people. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I mean, people are the way they are. And it's okay to be an introvert or quiet or guarded or whatever. And I just think it's different. I think that her coaching colleagues have always tried to get close to her or hope to get close to her and found that that's not a possibility with Kim Mulkey.
Just a couple more questions before I let you finish your morning, get ready to watch some. I guess we got 7 o'clock. We have NC State and our Gamecocks. And then at 9 o'clock, we have Paige Beckers versus Caitlin Clark. So we got good basketball this weekend. What do you want readers to take away from this piece?
I just want people to see that Kim is a three-dimensional person. She's a human being. I mean, like, I don't know. This is a silly comparison, but like, I think that in our life, deciding what we want to be good at and emphasize is like Madden attribute points. Like when you're building a player, like you have like just a finite number of attribute points. And like, she's put almost all of her attribute points in the basketball side and she's taken it away from personal relationships and forgiveness and things like that. And I mean, I kind of feel like everybody knows somebody like Kim Mulkey, who's just like so driven and I'm going to show you. And if you don't like it, then goodbye.
Yeah.
And it is extreme on both sides. Her success is extreme. Her closed offness is extreme. And, you know, you're talking about the Final Four. Like somebody asked me the other day, like, is she a villain? Is Kim a villain? No, the villain is the damn NCAA tournament committee because they didn't put LSU in NC State's bracket so we could have WrestleMania this weekend. Like, it could be South Carolina, UConn, Iowa, LSU in the Final Four. Who emerges and takes the belt? I mean, like, that's the thing that I love about this is, like, these characters, these people, these personalities – are so big. And like, that's, I think, why like the women's tournament has been more interesting than the men's tournament. Like, people just want to see, and whether you can like these people, you can hate them, you can say you're tired of them, whatever. But man, like, if that was the Final Four, I don't know who I would pick to emerge, but I would love to see this like all out battle. I guess it's more like Royal Rumble than WrestleMania, but like, I'd like to see kind of who's the last person standing.
Well, we're gonna take our Wolfpack seriously and hopefully make it to the championship this year. That we left a sour taste in our mouth in our early exit last year. How can listeners find the Kim Mulkey article and how can they follow you on social media? Also, tell them about your two books.
Yep, it's on WashingtonPost.com. It had been on the front page. I don't know if it still is, but it's pretty easy to find. I feel like I'm like Coach Prime. Ain't hard to find. And social media, at Kent Babb on X, formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram, by Kent Babb. And my two books are Not a Game, about Allen Iverson, that came out in 2015. Man, I would love to have a new do-over on that one. I think it's still a really good book, but like he's just finally come to terms with kind of who he is post basketball.
You can add a addendum to the book,
though. I know, right? Yeah, like I would love to do that just to like show the fun AI. And Across the River came out in 2021, and I'm very proud of that. It's about the power of high school sports and football in particular, and this pretty much all-black high school and part of New Orleans that nobody who looks like me ever goes to. And, man, I spent a lot of time over there, learned an awful lot, and my life will never be the same. So buy my book. My babies need a new pair of shoes.
Kim Babb, we love you. You can stay off social media for a little bit longer. You've been trending long enough. And I hope to see you in Cleveland, but if not, we'll catch up soon.
All right, Bakari. Thanks, man. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.